A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He says one of the strangest developments in modern political history was Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server. And as someone who self-hosted just about everything over the years, he remembers getting a droll laugh when the controversy broke. Not because of the politics, but because standing up a viable email server that doesn't get flagged as spam is a technical nightmare even committed self-hosters tend to steer away from. And if you're doing it for privacy, the benefits are marginal. Email is a two-way process. Even if your copy lives on your own hardware, somebody else has your messages on theirs. He also can't imagine Clinton was the type who enjoyed getting deep in the weeds of mail transfer agents. So his question is, what specifically did she set up? Why, and why was it so controversial?
This is what makes the whole episode so surreal from a technical standpoint. The most infamous self-hosted email server in history wasn't run by some Silicon Valley privacy obsessive in a garage. It was run by the Secretary of State of the United States from her basement in Chappaqua, New York, on a refurbished Dell PowerEdge 2950 running Microsoft Exchange 2010.
A refurbished Dell.
A refurbished Dell PowerEdge. This is a rack mount server from 2006 that you could pick up on eBay for a few hundred bucks. It's loud, it runs hot, and it was sitting in the basement of a suburban home, humming away, handling emails about drone strikes and diplomatic negotiations.
The Secretary of State's national security correspondence was routing through what is essentially Craigslist enterprise hardware, in a basement, presumably next to a water heater and some Christmas decorations.
That's the image. And Daniel's instinct about this being funny rather than scandalous, at least at first glance, is exactly the right lens for a technical person. Because anyone who has ever tried to self-host email knows that what she attempted, or what her aides attempted on her behalf, is genuinely one of the hardest things you can do in IT. And she did it while running American foreign policy.
Which is what makes it the cautionary tale that keeps sysadmins awake at night. With the midterms approaching and every public official's technical decisions getting more scrutiny than ever, the Clinton server is the reference case. It's the thing you point to and say, this is what happens when someone with no technical background decides they want control over their communications, and nobody in the room has the authority or the knowledge to say no.
And we should be clear about what this episode is and isn't. We are not relitigating the 2016 election. We're not doing political analysis of the FBI investigation or the Comey press conference. What we're doing is a technical autopsy. What was actually in that basement? How did it work? What did they get right? What did they get catastrophically wrong? And what does the whole disaster teach us about the gap between perceived privacy and actual security?
Because that gap is the real story. Self-hosting email feels private. It feels like you're taking control. Your emails are on your hardware, in your house, under your roof. That's an emotionally satisfying idea. It is also, from a security and deliverability standpoint, almost completely wrong.
The Clinton case is the most extreme possible version of that disconnect. Here you have someone with a national security portfolio handling classified information, and the email infrastructure protecting it was a single Exchange server with no full disk encryption, no two-factor authentication, backed up to a USB drive, maintained by a part-time IT staffer who was also working his day job at the State Department.
The USB drive detail is the one that always gets me. The Secretary of State. On a thumb drive.
It's the kind of thing where if you proposed it in a security audit meeting, people would assume you were joking. And yet, that was the actual setup. For 4 years.
Let's start with the hardware, because it sets the tone for everything that follows. What exactly was sitting in that Chappaqua basement?
It was a Dell PowerEdge 2950, a two-unit rack server originally released in 2006. It ran on Intel Xeon processors from that era, probably dual-core or quad-core. These things were workhorses for small businesses, but by 2009, when this server was set up, it was already aging hardware. And it was refurbished, which means it had a previous life somewhere else before it became the email infrastructure for American diplomacy.
Off the secondary market?
We don't have a receipt, but the FBI investigation established that the server was set up in mid-2009, before Clinton became Secretary of State, and it was configured by two people. Justin Cooper, a Clinton family aide, not an IT professional, and Brian Pagliano, a State Department IT staffer who later worked on the server in what he described as a private capacity.
A family aide and a government IT guy moonlighting. That's the operations team for the Secretary of State's private email infrastructure.
Pagliano was the one with actual technical knowledge, but he was doing this on the side. He'd come by, apply patches, fix things when they broke, and then go back to his actual job at State. That's your security posture. Part-time maintenance by someone who's not supposed to be doing it.
What about the software? You mentioned Exchange 2010.
Microsoft Exchange Server 2010, running on Windows Server 2008 R2. This is not a hobbyist setup. Exchange is a full enterprise email and calendaring platform. It requires Active Directory, which means the server was running a domain controller. It needed DNS configuration, SSL certificates, careful firewall rules. This is a complex piece of software that large organizations pay dedicated teams to manage.
It's not like she installed Thunderbird on an old laptop and called it a day. This was serious commercial software.
And that's part of what makes the story so strange. The software stack was enterprise grade, but the operational practices around it were amateur. It's like putting a commercial jet engine in a go-kart. Impressive on paper, but the integration is where everything falls apart.
The domain was clintonemail.com.
Yes, registered through a private email exchange record, the MX record, so mail was routed directly to the server in her basement. Anyone emailing her at her clintonemail.com address was sending messages that terminated on a Dell PowerEdge in suburban New York.
Which brings us to the first major technical hurdle that anyone who's tried self-hosting immediately recognizes. How did they get the mail delivered?
This is the spam deliverability problem, and it's the reason most self-hosters give up within weeks. Most residential ISPs, like the one in Chappaqua, block port 25 outbound. That's the standard port for SMTP, the protocol that sends email. They block it specifically to prevent compromised home computers from sending spam.
Even if you set up Exchange perfectly, your ISP just says no.
So Clinton's team had to use a workaround. They almost certainly used a smart host or an SMTP relay service, which means the server would send outgoing mail to a third-party relay, and that relay would handle actual delivery to Gmail and Yahoo and the State Department's own servers. The alternative would have been a business-grade ISP connection that allowed port 25 outbound, which is possible, but would have required a different service tier.
Even with a relay, you've got the IP reputation problem.
Which is brutal. When you set up a new mail server, your IP address has zero reputation. The major email providers treat unknown senders as guilty until proven innocent. Every email you send gets flagged as suspicious. You have to slowly, over months, build up a reputation by sending mail that recipients actually open and reply to. And if you ever have a spike in bounce rates or spam complaints, your reputation tanks and you're back to square one.
The Secretary of State's emails about diplomatic negotiations were, at least initially, landing in spam folders across Washington.
There's no way around it. A single Exchange server on a residential or small business IP range, sending to thousands of different recipients across dozens of email providers with no established sending history. The deliverability rate for the first few months was probably terrible. We don't have the logs, but anyone who's done this knows what it looks like. You send an email, it vanishes into the void, and the recipient never sees it.
Which raises an interesting question. If her emails were getting spam filtered, how did anyone know to whitelist her?
That's the advantage of being Secretary of State. If a foreign minister doesn't get your email, their staff calls your staff, and someone figures out that the message got caught in a spam filter. Then the IT people on both sides manually whitelist the clintonemail.com domain. It's the kind of workaround that only works if you have the diplomatic leverage to make people jump through hoops for you. If you or I set up a personal mail server tomorrow and our emails started getting spam filtered, nobody's calling us to ask why. We just look unreliable. the social infrastructure that propped up Clinton's server is not replicable for normal people.
Let's talk about the security posture, because this is where it goes from technically challenging to alarming.
The server had no full disk encryption at rest. That means if someone physically stole the server, or if law enforcement seized it, every email on the hard drives would be immediately readable. No password, no decryption key, nothing. Just plug in the drives and read.
For a Secretary of State, no disk encryption.
It also had no two-factor authentication. Access to the server was protected by a password, and that's it. No hardware token, no biometric, no secondary verification. If someone obtained or guessed the password, they had full access. And this was 2009 through 2013. Two-factor authentication existed. Google had it. Banks had it. It wasn't exotic technology.
What was protecting it?
Whatever consumer-grade firewall was in place at the house, plus the Windows firewall on the server itself, and whatever security patches Pagliano applied when he got around to it. The FBI later investigated and found no evidence of successful intrusion. But here's the key detail. The server was never professionally penetration tested. No security audit. No outside firm was ever brought in to try to break in and find vulnerabilities.
The fact that the FBI found no evidence of intrusion doesn't mean the server was secure. It means they didn't find evidence. Those are different things.
Absence of evidence is not evidence of absence, especially when you're talking about a server that was decommissioned in 2013 and examined years later. Sophisticated intruders clean up after themselves. The FBI's conclusion was that there was no evidence of successful intrusion, which is the most they could honestly say. It doesn't mean nobody got in.
The backup strategy was the USB drive.
Emails were backed up to a personal computer using a USB drive, not to an encrypted offsite backup, not to a secure cloud service, a thumb drive plugged into a laptop, presumably sitting somewhere in the same house. If the basement flooded, or the house caught fire, or someone broke in and stole the server and the backup drive, everything was gone. This is the opposite of what any IT professional would recommend for sensitive communications.
To summarize the security posture, a refurbished server in a basement, no disk encryption, no two-factor authentication, never pen tested, maintained part-time by a moonlighting IT staffer, backed up to a USB stick. And this was the email infrastructure for the nation's top diplomat.
That's the technical reality. And it's why, when Daniel says he got a droll laugh reading about the controversy, I completely understand. From a sysadmin's perspective, this isn't a story about espionage or criminal intent. It's a story about what happens when someone with no technical knowledge decides they want control, and the people around them either don't know enough to push back or don't have the standing to do so.
Which brings us to the question Daniel asked that I think is the most interesting one. Why would anyone, especially a Secretary of State, choose this path?
The official explanation was convenience. Clinton wanted to use a single device, her BlackBerry, for both personal and official email, rather than carrying two phones. And the State Department's IT infrastructure at the time didn't easily support personal BlackBerry integration with the official email system, so the server was a workaround.
One phone instead of two. That's the official reason for standing up an entire exchange infrastructure in your basement.
That's the stated reason. But there's obviously more to it. Self-hosting gave her complete ownership of her communications. The emails were on her hardware, under her control, outside the reach of State Department IT policies, Freedom of Information Act requests, and potential surveillance. Whether that was the intent or just a convenient side effect, it was the result.
That's the core of the legal controversy. But before we go there, I want to sit with the technical absurdity for another minute. This was a person who, by all accounts, had no interest in mail transfer agents or DNS records or IP reputation scoring. She was not a tinkerer. She was not a self-hosting enthusiast. She was a politician and a lawyer.
Yet she ended up running what was, in effect, a small business email infrastructure out of her basement. Not because she wanted to learn about Exchange Server, but because the alternative, carrying two phones, was inconvenient enough to justify the entire enterprise.
The inconvenience of a second phone versus the inconvenience of running a mail server. One of those things is much harder than the other, and she picked the hard one.
Or more accurately, she had other people pick the hard one for her. Pagliano and Cooper did the actual work. But she authorized it, and she used it, and she presumably never thought about what was actually involved in keeping it running.
Which is its own kind of lesson. When non-technical leaders make technical decisions, the decisions are often about social and political convenience, not about what makes engineering sense. The server existed because it solved a social problem. One phone is easier than two, and the technical cost was invisible to the person making the choice.
The technical cost was enormous, not just in terms of security risk, but in terms of the political fallout that followed. The thing that was supposed to be convenient became one of the defining controversies of her career.
That's the setup. A Dell PowerEdge in the basement, running Exchange 2010, maintained by a part-time aide, no encryption, no two-factor, USB backups, all so the Secretary of State could carry one BlackBerry instead of two. The question Daniel's really asking is, how did this happen, and what does it tell us about the limits of self-hosting? And I think the answer starts with understanding exactly how the server worked, technically, and then what happened when the whole thing collided with federal record-keeping laws.
Before we get into the legal side, there's a deeper tension here. Self-hosting email is a nightmare even for experts. We're talking about someone with no technical background making a decision that put her communications infrastructure outside the entire federal security apparatus. And it wasn't some rogue IT guy going behind her back. She approved this.
That's what makes it a case study rather than just a weird anecdote. The gap between what self-hosting feels like and what it actually is. It feels like taking control. Your emails, your hardware, your basement. Nobody can subpoena Google because there is no Google. Nobody can hack the cloud because there is no cloud. It's an emotionally satisfying idea.
It's almost completely wrong from a security standpoint. The State Department has dedicated security teams, monitored networks, intrusion detection systems, forensic logging, incident response procedures. Clinton's basement had a Dell server and a guy who stopped by occasionally to apply patches. The perceived security of self-hosting, the idea that physical possession equals protection, is exactly the opposite of how security actually works at scale.
Let's do what Daniel's asking. What was the actual architecture? How did it work? And what does the whole disaster teach anyone who's ever thought about hosting their own email?
We've covered the hardware. The Dell PowerEdge 2950 refurbished loud hot sitting in a basement. The software was Exchange 2010 on Windows Server 2008 R2, a full enterprise stack requiring Active Directory, DNS configuration, SSL certificates, and careful firewall rules. The domain was clintonemail.com with a private MX record routing mail directly to that basement server.
The two people running it were Justin Cooper, a family aide with no IT background, and Brian Pagliano, a State Department IT staffer moonlighting in his spare time. Part-time maintenance, no monitoring, no on-call rotation. If the server went down during a diplomatic crisis, someone would have to notice, call Pagliano, and hope he was available.
Then there's the deliverability nightmare. Residential ISPs block port 25 outbound, so they almost certainly used a smart host or SMTP relay service. And even once you solve the port blocking, you hit the IP reputation wall. A new mail server on a residential IP range has zero reputation. Every email gets flagged as suspicious. The deliverability rate for the first few months was probably terrible.
The only reason it worked at all was diplomatic leverage. When a foreign minister didn't get her email, their staff called their staff, and IT departments on both sides manually whitelisted the domain. That's not a technical solution. That's a social workaround that only functions if you're the Secretary of State.
Contrast this with a typical self-hoster today. Someone running PostFix on a Raspberry Pi with DKM, SPF, and DMARC records carefully configured. That person has probably spent weeks reading documentation, testing configurations, and monitoring delivery reports. Clinton's setup was more powerful hardware-wise, but in some key ways less secure than what a dedicated hobbyist would build. The hobbyist would have encryption at rest. The hobbyist would have proper backup rotation. The hobbyist would probably have some kind of monitoring. The Clinton server had none of that.
The security posture bears repeating. No full disk encryption at rest. If someone stole the server, every email was immediately readable. No two-factor authentication. A password was the only thing standing between an attacker and the nation's diplomatic correspondence. The server was never professionally penetration tested, and the backup strategy was a USB drive plugged into a laptop in the same house.
The FBI later found no evidence of successful intrusion, but that's not the same as proof of security. The server was decommissioned in 2013 and examined years later. Logs get rotated, forensic artifacts degrade, and sophisticated intruders clean up after themselves. The FBI's conclusion was the most they could honestly say given the evidence available.
That's the technical reality. But the question Daniel's really driving at is why? And the official explanation was convenience. One BlackBerry instead of two. But self-hosting gave her something no State Department system could offer. Complete ownership of her communications, outside the reach of IT policies, FOIA requests, and potential surveillance.
This is where the legal controversy actually lives. It's not really about the security of the server, it's about the Federal Records Act. By routing official business through a private server, Clinton effectively bypassed federal record-keeping laws. Emails that should have been preserved as government records, searchable, archivable, subject to FOIA, were instead under her personal control. She decided what was a work email and what wasn't. She decided what to turn over and what to delete.
That's the core of the legal problem, not whether the server was hackable. Whether the server's existence was itself a mechanism for circumventing public accountability.
This is where the Colin Powell comparison gets interesting. Powell also used a personal email account for official business. He was on AOL, but he didn't self-host. The difference is that AOL, as a third-party provider, had legal obligations. They kept records. They could be subpoenaed. Clinton's private server had no such obligations. There was no neutral third party holding the data.
The Powell situation was, I use personal email on someone else's infrastructure. And the Clinton situation was, I built my own infrastructure specifically so there would be no someone else.
That's the distinction that matters, and it had a knock-on effect. The Clinton scandal made self-hosting email politically radioactive. Any public official who self-hosts now faces immediate suspicion. Why do you need your own server? What are you hiding? The assumption is guilt.
Which is a problem for legitimate privacy advocates. If a journalist or an activist wants to self-host to protect sources, the Clinton case hangs over them. The Secretary of State couldn't do it without scandal, so what chance do you have?
The deeper technical lesson, the one Daniel was getting at in his prompt, is that even if you do everything right, DKIM, SPF, demarquee, encryption, proper backups, email is fundamentally a two-party system. Your security is only as good as the recipient's email provider. You can have perfect encryption at rest, perfect firewall rules, perfect everything on your end, but every email you send is stored on at least one other server that you don't control. Clinton's emails lived on her Dell PowerEdge, but they also lived on the State Department's servers, on Gmail servers, on the email systems of every foreign official she corresponded with.
Self-hosting gives you control over your copy. It does not give you control over the copies that exist elsewhere. And that's the fundamental limitation that makes self-hosting for privacy mostly theater.
Compare this to a journalist using ProtonMail or Tutanota. Those services encrypt emails end-to-end, but only if both parties use the same service. The moment you email someone on Gmail, that message is sitting unencrypted on Google servers. Clinton's Exchange server had no end-to-end encryption at all. Emails were stored in plain text. Anyone with access to the server, or to any server that received those emails, could read them.
Here's the irony. Clinton's server was probably more secure than the average State Department employee's setup, not because it was well configured, but because it was a single, known system. The State Department runs a sprawling enterprise with thousands of endpoints, legacy systems, contractors with access, and the attack surface that comes with all of that. A single server in a basement, for all its flaws, is a smaller target.
The perception of secrecy, the fact that it existed outside the official system, made it a political liability far beyond any actual security risk. The server wasn't the worst email setup in the federal government. It was just the one that looked the most like someone was trying to hide something.
What do we actually tell someone who's listening to this and thinking, I could do it better?
First thing, the spam deliverability problem is the hardest part, and it's not even close. You can configure Exchange or Postfix perfectly, but if the major providers don't trust your IP, your emails vanish. You need a static IP with a clean reputation, which usually means paying for a business-grade connection or a virtual private server. You need SPF, DKIM, and DMARC configured correctly. And even then, expect a 20 to 30% deliverability rate to Gmail and Outlook for the first few months. It takes time to build trust, and during that time, you will lose emails. And most people don't have ambassadors calling to ask why their messages disappeared. Self-hosting email does not give you privacy. It gives you control over your copy. But every message you send is stored on at least one other server you don't control. If you want actual privacy, use end-to-end encryption, PGP, or a service like ProtonMail where the encryption is built in. Self-hosting without encryption is just theater. You've moved the data to your basement, but it's still sitting in plain text on someone else's machine the moment you hit send.
The third takeaway is the one that probably applies to 99% of people listening. For most of us, the best setup is a paid, privacy-focused provider with a custom domain. Fastmail, ProtonMail, Tutanota. You get the control of owning your own domain, so you're not locked into any one provider, without the operational nightmare of running a mail server.
The Clinton case proves that even with functionally unlimited resources, the kind of resources a Secretary of State can bring to bear, self-hosting email is still a bad idea. Not because it's impossible, but because the benefits are marginal and the failure modes are catastrophic.
The failure pattern here wasn't even technical. The server didn't get hacked as far as we know. The failure was procedural and political. The mere existence of the server outside the official system destroyed trust. That's the thing self-hosters never model. It's not just about whether your config is correct. It's about what happens when someone else has to audit your decisions.
That's the thing that stays with me. The server itself was decommissioned in 2013. The emails were handed over. The hardware got unplugged and presumably recycled or destroyed. But the question it raised didn't go away. As more public officials work remotely, use personal devices, and communicate through channels that don't automatically archive to a government server, we're still living in the world that server created.
The Clinton server was a 2009 solution to a 2009 problem. One BlackBerry, one email account, one basement. But the underlying tension between personal control and public record keeping is more relevant now than it was then. Everyone's working from home now. Everyone's using Signal and WhatsApp and whatever encrypted thing comes next. The next generation of public officials isn't going to set up exchange servers. They're going to use decentralized protocols and encrypted messengers that make the Clinton setup look like a filing cabinet.
Those tools are better for privacy. But they create the exact same accountability problem. If a cabinet secretary conducts official business over Signal and the messages disappear, have they violated the Federal Records Act? The technical mechanism is different, but the structural problem is identical. How do you preserve public records when the communication tools are designed to leave no trace?
The Clinton case is a warning, not a template. It's not that self-hosting is inherently corrupt, or that encrypted messaging is inherently suspicious. It's that the gap between what feels private and what's actually accountable is where democracies get into trouble. And we haven't solved it. We've just moved the problem to newer apps.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the late 1600s, a theory circulated among certain natural philosophers that the Simpson Desert was once an inland sea, and that its red sands were the desiccated remains of a vast coral reef. The theory was abandoned when someone actually visited.
The entire theory collapsed the moment someone showed up.
Which is a kind of peer review, I suppose.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review the podcast. It helps other weirdos find us.
This has been My Weird Prompts. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Corn. We'll catch you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird stay curious, keep weird in mind.